Hey everybody, welcome back to episode 2 of the Dirty Apple Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be talking with the Whiskey River Kings. We recorded this one live from Clearwave Studios in Decatur, Alabama. It's tucked away in a nice little portion of Decatur, kind of next to a luxury golf course. And by luxury, we mean mini golf. In the beginning, you're going to be able to hear David Gist laying down some tracks for the new album from the Whiskey River Kings. It's called Desperate Times, and it's going to be released June 30th. Look for that on iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, and pretty much anything with two speakers plugged into it. Some cool stuff coming up from Dirty Apple includes our stream show on May 25th. It's going to include some live stream music on YouTube from artists such as Rivers and Rust, Robbie Eichmann, and the Whiskey River Kings. Check our page on Facebook for more details on that. We also have Rajapalooza 2 coming up on June 8th in Russell, Alabama. We're going to have a whole day's worth of music, lots of our bands and some other bands from North Alabama. We hope you come check it out. It's only going to be $5. Check us out on Facebook.com/DirtyApple for more details on that. We're going to give another plug this week. We want to do this one for Invisible City. It's hosted by our good friend Brad Posey. It airs Friday and Saturday nights on WLRH 89.3 in North Alabama. We're happy to be working with Brad to send two of our bands to the Invisible City Fest. Look for that in late September. Okay, you know what? No more BS for me. Let's go ahead and get into the interview. Here comes the interview with Whiskey River Kings.
Like you're holding $2,000
with that thing, man.
They take abuse.
Okay. I wish you guys, we'll go around the room, everybody say your name so we know whose voice belongs to who, and also tell me what you play and any other random crap you'd like to. Sorry.
Frankie Gardner, lead vocals, rhythm guitar, harmonica.
Taylor Moore, drums, percussion, vocals, trombone. That's about it.
That's about it.
Stephen Frog, Hudson, saxophone and piano. And other random junk.
Dan Williams, I play bass and trumpet and accordion.
Alex Bradford, I work for Dirty Apple.
But Alex, you play with him every once in a while.
Yeah, I do. I get up on stage, I play some songs. I live with Frank and Taylor, which is an absolute misery.
Besides work is
the wrong word. That's a terrible thing.
Yeah, work is the wrong word.
Now, this is kind of cool. I didn't know this about you guys until maybe about a week or two ago that a lot of y'all were living together. How long has that been going on?
Last year or so.
Yeah.
It's
been an interesting ride.
Yeah, it's been fun.
We laughed, we cried,
we bled. We broke each other's bones.
Are y'all ever able to like work better together, or do y'all like hate each other at the end of the day because of stuff like that?
No, man, we get along well. I mean, for all intents and purposes, everybody in this band's kind of like family anyway, and we spend so much time together. I mean, we have our differences and our disagreements, but we always seem to work them out.
They don't usually amount to much more than a broken ankle, I guess.
Yeah, right.
That's pretty much the extreme.
Rub a little Robitussin on it, you'll be all right.
Yeah. The threats go way further than that, but I think I'm going to stab you in the face with a soldering iron. It's your personal favorite.
Yeah,
that's a good
that's my personal favorite. Yeah.
Christopher Walken.
Well, today is actually kind of a first for what we've been working on. You know, I've been telling everybody we're trying to work out the kinks with this podcast and everything, but actually getting to record in an actual real studio as opposed to like our jury-rigged equipment is pretty cool. What now, remind me, what's the name of this place again?
Clearwave Studios, located in
Decatur,
beautiful
Alabama.
Decatur, Alabama.
Yeah. The beautiful.
Right next Decatur, where it's greater.
Luxury 18-hole golf course next door.
Right? Which is right next to the sewage treatment. Went, so,
oh, that's what that was outside.
You can't even smell the meow mix from here, so.
Oh, yeah, home of the meow mix.
It's a diamond in the rough, for sure.
It definitely is.
It's great.
You wouldn't think it looking at this place, but.
Yeah.
I remember about it.
Inside, it's kind of mind-blowing.
About a year or so ago, I went to a show at Crossroads, and the Barnstormers were playing. They're from here in Decatur.
Yeah.
And I remember he said that, Decatur, Alabama, where it smells like meth and meow mix or something like that.
That's
Ronnie.
That's about it.
That has a lot to do with the economy locally. It's a big part. It's a big support.
Everybody hates on Decatur all the time, but we were driving down here today. You know, we went past 65, and man, it's like actually really pretty down here with the river and everything, but I guess that's the only pretty
part. It's got a lot of potential here. It's trying to get to that point, and right now I think it's getting there. It,
they're kind of late on it.
Next up, we're going to talk about zoning.
We're going to talk about zoning.
Let's go back to the 2014 year. It is as follows.
But for real, Decatur's a great city if you got money.
Well, no, any place.
Any place.
There's
a
t-shirt.
If you have money.
There's a t-shirt here in Decatur. It has Stephen Decatur on the front. It says, Decatur, Alabama. It's not boring. You are.
And that's amazing.
It's him saying it. And it's the coolest shirt.
Well, Decatur actually does have, like, a good music scene, though, right? Like, what all bands can you think of that are from here right now?
Well, really, Barnstormers.
Yeah, no. And that covers the past 20 years.
And the most popular one was a pop-punk band called Caradale. And then another band was Andy Asteroids, but they kind of went in their own little...
Yeah.
Ways.
You know, you've been like a big proponent of Andy Asteroids. Tell me a little bit about them.
Well, it consists of four people. Alex Powell was a drummer and the lead vocalist. And then he was a very like rock drummer, but kind of got a poppy influence in his vocals. And then Nick Wales, he's a bass player, very Victor Wooten style bass playing, and very funky. And then Joseph Davenport, he's guitar player. He's very jazz guitar player. And then Draven, he was a keyboard player. And very R&B. Now he does rap and R&B, makes beats and stuff. So they all came from all different genres, from every area.
You were talking to me about them about a month ago when we were over at the Inn in Florence. Were they like a big influence for you to like get started in all this?
In a way, yeah, because I mean, like I went to school with all of them. We were all good friends. I hang out with half of them still anyway, as it is, and so listened to a lot of their stuff, you know, hearing that it was such a different type of music in the area, I knew that if that had potential, that other stuff like that could be around here as well.
Awesome. Well, y'all could probably notice that the guitar work that we were hearing just a few minutes ago stopped.
Mr. David,
he's joined the ranks.
It really took me about 2 hours.
I know. It sounds like you're playing the same chord over and over.
I was.
Did you nail it? What were you working on in there?
It was Catch 22. It's just the groove of it was messing me up for some reason.
Yeah.
Well, boy ain't got no soul.
I was trying to do less than what I was doing, pretty much.
You guys were working on some horn work before we started recording this. Was that also for Catch 22?
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I think you guys are up.
Oh, really? Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
We're about to have to go get real marching band with it.
You guys are next on the docket for this one.
Yep.
Which of you guys played in marching band in high school? Now, wait a minute. Everybody's about to see you raise your hands.
Here we all.
That would be Taylor, Frog, myself, and my wife.
I was actually popular in high school, so...
Oh!
Yeah, and now you're hanging out with us. What does that say about you?
Yeah, what does that say about you? Do those kind of habits that y'all picked up in marching band, do they kind of stick with you now? Like, you find yourself, like, marching your feet a little bit?
I used to.
Internalizing a beat and smelling bad are two proponents that I hold very highly.
That's true. He smelled funky as long as I've known him.
Yeah, it's true. It's a bad
funkiest drummer in the world. Always.
We were watching the Struggling Jimmys play before y'all about
and
a month ago.
He does mark time.
Yeah, he does do that. You can tell when he's singing.
Yeah. What's funny though?
Yeah,
he was never in band.
What? Really?
He marks time, but he said he was never in marching band.
Well, then where did he get that?
He just does it.
Wow, okay.
That's cool.
Yeah,
I've never noticed. I asked him that too. I said, "Dude, you marching time?" You know, we was at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, "Dude, I don't even." He's like, "Man, I don't even. I never did that." I was like, "Oh, okay."
It's a deep, dark secret he's trying to hide.
Yeah, probably.
He probably played
oboe.
Yeah, he played oboe.
He had a wooden flute at his house, so tuning only in G minor.
So tell me a little bit about the record y'all been working on. Like, what day of work is this? Y'all been at it for at least a month, right?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't done it, you know, for a month straight, but it's been, we've been doing it over the weekends between shows and coming in some weeknights. And
it's been grueling.
Yeah, last couple months. I mean, it's going on, like, you know, 8 weeks, I guess, on and off. We'll come in all together, or we'll come in separate groups depending on what we're working on, so...
Well, a lot of this is still tracked differently. You'll do like the horn parts individually, like you guys were working on earlier, and then you'll obviously get the guitar part down, like you're working on just then. Like in this whole process, have y'all ever done anything like all at the same time?
Well, that's how every track starts.
Okay,
and we usually set up in the room, which we got around done with that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been here a couple of times and recorded on a couple of albums here, and it's different every time. Like the first thing you always focus on is the drums.
Yeah.
Drums and then bass.
And I'm a lot more comfortable, you know, as opposed to having a metronome, you know,
I like coming in and having like a guitar scratch track that we can, we might keep it if it's good enough. If it's not, you know, whatever, we can just track it later. But, you know, it gives it more of an organic
just a whole live feel. You know, like the live feed, everybody playing at once.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, and that's what Jeremy always talks about, our producer, Jeremy Stevens, who I think is going to come speak here shortly. He always wants to capture that live energy, you know, especially in the drum and bass tracks. So we set up and do a live take as if we were playing a show. And we're only tracking the drums, you know, that. But just
but you have to get the groove down
and then go back and build the rest of the song on top of that. So individually in booths.
Yeah. So where are y'all at now, like in the process? It sounds like you're... You said something earlier that you're about like 80%
Yeah, about 80% something like that. Complete somewhere, you know.
A lot of detailing. A lot of detailing.
Yeah, it's down to the details.
It's kind of like detailing a car a little bit. You got to get the little nitty gritty pieces.
Yeah,
exactly. Put the ghost flames on it.
We're changing out the headlights.
Yeah,
you got to put some vinyl on it.
It'll make it go faster.
Go faster. The flames on the tires to make it go faster. Yeah, absolutely. So like, what? Okay. Going back to, like, y'all's first album, what do you think, like, are the main changes between your first album and this album?
I don't want to say, I don't want to say everything, but everything.
Yeah. Yeah, well, not everything. I mean, a lot of people that have heard, we've been playing some of these tracks that will be on the new album live for the last couple months, and in one sentence, it's more rock and roll this time. We're still, the lyrics and the songs are still... you know, folky and sometimes country and sometimes bluesy, you know, telling stories and stuff. But the music has changed a lot. It's gone more in a rock and roll direction. But we've tried to go backwards in time and capture some of that classic sound, you know, with a lot of this record. A lot of the songs that were written with the, you know, 60s, 70s type music thing in mind. Whether it's gritty rock or whether it's one of the acoustic driven tracks, they're all kind of, I don't know, we're just kind of we move backwards with this, pulling from everybody's influences,
and not even just that, it's with, you know, Dan the old lead guitar player leaving and then adding in myself and Dave,
yeah,
just
that
transformed
the
whole sound completely into
changed a big part of the dynamic.
I mean, that's why a couple of the old tracks got re-recorded, because
that's
they
one
got
thing
so
that everybody will see on this record.
Two of the
favorites from the other album, first album, Talking Bourbon Blues and Kentucky Lullaby, we're going back, and we've already gone back and redone them.
She smelled of lavender and roses, but even roses die. The sun hides its face beneath the ocean in her eyes. So I hung myself from the moon and drowned myself.
Dave changed the whole dynamic of the song, and it needed to be, it was almost a brand new song.
It was.
Re-recorded. I mean, both of them really just need to be redone, so.
You know, I don't think, like, the vibe of the band has, the band, that's what inside joke, me and Jake, I suppose, the vibe of the band has changed all that much, but y'all's genre has, like, almost completely flipped from when you started. Like, initially when you guys started, it was more of, like, an Irish folk thing.
Yeah.
Man, I signed up to go to Frank's house and eat chicken and play wagon.
Yeah, we didn't sign up for this. We didn't
really this studio stuff is too fancy for us.
Yeah, right? And all these playing games and stuff. I just want to sit in the living room and eat chicken all day.
Like, I told them I would be playing.
Yeah, I mean, it was more of a, not just Irish folk. I mean, we pull a lot of those elements, but, you know, just folk in general, Appalachian folk. We were, you know, pulling from a heavy, or trying to pull from a heavy folk background. Just at the time that we put the band together, you know, it was like 2.5 years ago. It was, you know, it was all about Mumford and Sons breaking on the scene, and the Lumineers were doing their thing, and, you know, that folk rock was swelling, and we were kind of, you know, riding the tide of that. And I was real inspired by that. I know D-Dub was too. Like, we were really feeling that vibe. But then after that, kind of came this whole classic Muscle Shoals sound movement that just went worldwide. Like when the Shakes blew up and all that crap happened, it was like the whole folk rock thing transitioned into this classic rock, soul,
R&B,
funky type thing. And man, we just got swept up in it, man.
Mm-hmm.
Another step down that long, lonesome road home. Now you know another day is coming down in school. You work your heart. Down to the edge of the river, bringing that muddy water, swallow me whole. Take another drag in a long, hot swallow. Fire and whiskey gonna save my soul.
You say that like what you're doing now is a combination of those two things?
Yes,
like the,
absolutely.
The folksy sound and like the bluesy sound?
Don't want to get away from that. Every song starts on an acoustic guitar, and you know, a lot of the rhythms and song structures are very... You know, they're rock and roll, but with that folky background and wanting to, you know, a lot of the lyrics are very southern.
You know
what I mean? Like Talking Bourbon Blues and Kentucky Lullaby, it's still, they're still folk songs deep down. But
it's rock and driving music with a folksy format.
Well, you know, at this point, like, that kind of, like, rootsy sound like you're talking about that has come out of Muscle Shoals, like, it's been around long enough that it is, like, folksy in a way.
Yeah, it is. It's taking it back, you know,
Richard.
50 years at this point, you know? It's crazy how it all comes back around, but that whole movement's just been so awesome, just inspiring to see good music like that, you know, because that's the one common, we got a lot of different influences, but that's always been our one common ground, is that old rock and roll, like we all love that old rock and roll with the saxophone in it, you know, and with the piano in it, you know, that's just such a cool sound.
Well, let's think of it this way, like when you guys started, you had like a different set of influences than you have now. So like what were your influences then and what are your influences now?
We've been listening to a lot of different albums lately. Which Dave and, you know, Prog weren't there then, but we started out, like I said, we're listening to a lot of Mumford and Sons, we're listening to a lot of Avett Brothers.
Old Crow Medicine Show,
you know, that was the whole thing. And then, now, because, like, that's the thing about Old Crow, man, their whole background's 90s grunge rock, but they're a bluegrass band.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just that whole sound that was going on, but now it's more like, we're going to listen to a lot of Grace Potter and...
The Decemberists.
Yeah. And what else?
Of course, I listened to a lot of Dave Matthews.
The last couple Dave Matthews albums that came out really helped out, man.
Chili Peppers.
I really like this one band called The Deer Hunter. They're really weird, but they got some really unique ways of writing music and arranging. It's awesome.
Wow. It's Deer Hunter?
It's called The Deer Hunter.
Hey, what's going on? Yeah, we're recording. Introduce yourself. What's your name, Dave?
I'm Jeremy. Jeremy Stevens.
Good to see you, Jeremy. You been working with these bumps?
Yeah.
We try to keep him in line. We haven't had any luck either.
Nah, he's so tired of us now.
That's not even funny. People in the drum booth.
I know, man. This is great. This is great. Move the drums out. This could be the green room.
We were recording the podcast that we're trying to get off the ground with these guys. Tell us a little bit about like what you've been working on with them. Like, how's it been going?
Well, it's been going real good. We've got 10 songs.
Yeah.
And just, been getting the best performances. You know, they cut most of everything live. And we've, you know, been going over.
These guys were saying that.
Dubbing and, you know.
These guys were saying they estimated they're about 80% done. Do you think that's a fair estimate?
With the tracking.
With the tracking.
Yeah. You still got some stuff.
He's still not sure.
Yeah. I know he's feeling more like 30, but...
He's like, I don't even want to think about that percentage. I just don't.
Well, let me ask you this. Like, you're kind of serving as producer for these guys in this role, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, in that role, do you feel like you have, like, a set, like, goal of where you want it to be? Like, you already have, like, a vision of what it's going to sound like after it's done? Or do you kind of, like, play with it as it goes?
Definitely as it goes. you know, I just like to hear how they do live. I mean, I think of them as a live band, you know, and I try to capture that energy, you know, them playing together and, you know, picking out the strong points and maybe hiding some of the stuff that's not quite so strong.
Which is why you won't be hearing any bass on the new record.
No bass. No bass.
Yeah, it's a white stripes record.
Well, that's interesting that you bring that up. Like, what do you think the challenges are of, like, getting the energy of a live band onto a record like this?
You know, it's kind of, it can be hard at first for bands because it's kind of just a different environment. But these guys have been in here several times, and it seems like they've, you know, adjusted to it. You know, it's like playing a different type of gig, you know. And, you know, they seem to be a lot more, I mean, they seem to be comfortable in the studio, you know.
Yeah.
And they know if they don't get it on the first take, you know, we can do it a couple more times. And,
or a couple hundred more times.
Yeah.
Hopefully not.
Take one.
Well, that's an interesting question for you guys. Like, do y'all consider yourselves to be more of a studio band or more of a live band?
Definitely a live band. I mean, like I was saying earlier, the studio, the great thing about working on these songs in this setting, I mean, with live stuff, it's cut and dry. We're a five-piece band. You know, everybody's got their part. But when we come in here, you know, everyone in this band, you know, plays crap ton of different instruments. Like, you know, I play mandolin, banjo, harmonica. He plays accordion. These three guys, Frog and Dito and Taylor, all play horns.
Y'all are swapping out all the time.
Yeah, when we're in here, we get to use a lot of the elements that we hear in the songs that we can't do live because there just ain't enough people up there. But we can be a lot more creative with it. And then Dave and Frog both play keys, and we got to use a lot of Wurlitzer and piano and stuff in the studio. It's fun to pick the songs apart and see what kind of stuff you can put on them to make them, I don't know, tell the story better, you know.
Yeah.
Like some of that stuff's just cool. It's and you can't really do it live, you know, but in here you got a chance to back up and explore new directions with the music. These songs always go in, even with the last record, and anytime they come out sounding almost completely different than they did going in.
Taylor was really rocking that rain stick the other day. So.
Yeah, we
had rain stick.
I finally got to use a rain stick after all these years.
Yeah.
It's kind of a life-affirming
moment. It's like live songs. Live songs have an energy and a life, but when we get them in here, we can just put more weight on them.
Yeah. You know? Well, some of these songs that you're working on here in the studio, is there going to be like a live challenge associated with playing them live?
Well, some things we're just not going to be able to reproduce right now, like some of these horn parts and stuff like that.
It's pretty
that,
hard
you know?
To play drums and trombone at the same time.
That would be awesome if you could do that.
If I could get like a cradle system like Bob Dylan has for a harmonica, you know.
We need to get you like one of those like one-man band backpacks where you can play a cymbal.
Well, you know, if anybody out there, you know, listening wants to volunteer like an entire horn section, we're not going to pay you and you're going to work like, you know, 8 days a week, but if anybody wants to, you know, welcome to come join us.
8 days a week.
Well, a lot of the songs that you're recording right now, you already have been playing live. Like, what can you tell everybody about some of the stuff that you haven't played live that they're going to hear on the album?
Be
surprised.
Yeah.
It's the more chill stuff.
Yeah.
We surprised ourselves.
You guys have heard Fire and Whiskey and Dreamer's Hymn and Talking Bourbon, Talking Lullaby, some of the upbeat stuff, but there's a lot of tracks we haven't been playing live just because when you're out there trying to get everybody hyped at the bar, you know, you don't bring out the...
Nobody likes sad bastard music
right.
While they're trying.
That doesn't sell the beer.
Sad bastard music.
It's going to be...
Wow, that would have been a good album title. It's too late now.
Yeah, that would have been
sort of music.
That's actually my solo album.
Sounds like Tom Waits. Like,
Well, how about, like, lyrically, though? Is this a different record than your last one?
If it's the lyrics you like, then there's a lot of sweat and blood and tears in this album. I'll tell you that. Everyone's had a crack at songwriting on this one, and there's a lot of experiences in this one. Some of them, like I was telling you earlier, it's a contrast of hopelessness and hope over the course of the album. You know, there's a lot of sad bastard music and a lot of upbeat, you know, keep your chin up type stuff. And then, like, Talking Bourbon and Kentucky Lullaby are just fun, you know.
Well, you know, Jake and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. You might have heard. Come in here, Jake. He's sitting here. He hasn't said a word. Me and you were talking a couple weeks ago about how some of the songs that you write are autobiographical. See, I still didn't say it right.
You said it fine.
I said it fine. Okay. Well, how does that work? Like, mention to me again, like, how does that work out for you? Do you, like, draw from your own experiences?
Not at all. It just kind of comes. You listen to a song in your head all day, and it just comes to you.
Okay. Well, how does that work for you guys? Like, are you drawing from your own experience? Like, are you telling your own story?
Entirely autobiographical.
That's all I do. It's almost got kind of a gonzo journalism type feel to it.
Oh, you're bringing out the Hunter S. Thompson.
Well, I mean, you know.
He just likes to say gonzo.
I just like that word a lot, but I do have
gonzo the Muppet.
It's like, there's certain songs that do describe life experiences, but after a while you can kind of tell that, he absolutely didn't kill that woman.
You know,
he wouldn't be up here playing and singing about it if he did, you know? Like,
I'm not sure.
Well, who knows? It's
best to hide in plain sight.
Innocent until proven guilty.
You guys have been, like, pretty collaborative on, like, the songwriting process, right? So, like, every one of you guys have been writing a little piece of this. Like, tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, living, you know, Frank and I and Brad lived together. And
Sharing a lot of the same experiences.
And, you know, it's just easy to work with each other in that capacity.
And like Jake was saying, like, it does just come to you, though. You know, it's just one of those things. And a lot of times we'll finish. I mean, me and D-Dub do primarily most of the lyrical writing, but 9 times out of 10, I don't think we don't finish a whole song by ourselves. It usually gets passed back and forth and then passed to Taylor and passed to Frog, passed to Dave, and lyrics get modified and changed. And usually, you know, like Dave writes a song or Frog or Taylor or somebody, they'll bring it to me and I'll tweak things and then give it back and they'll tweak things. And it gets passed, every song gets passed around and,
like a college final.
Yeah. See, that's news to me. I didn't know that you guys, like, had so many drafts of songs as it goes around. Like, y'all pass, like before something is completely done, everybody's, like, put their stamp of approval on it. Like, you'll pass it around to everybody as far as lyrics go?
The exception is Desperate Times, and that's just,
that one came together in, like, 15 minutes. They had the song worked out. Well, they were practicing, and we were at rehearsal, and I was in the other room or smoking or something, and they had put the music part of that song together in like 15 minutes on top of some riff that David wrote and started building upon that. And then I came in and just caught the vibe and wrote the lyrics in like 5 minutes. And, you know, that never happens, but, you know, sometimes it does. And sometimes, like, Dreamer's Hand took like 4 freaking months to write. So.
I mean, Fire and Whiskey started out when we were still primarily a folk band.
Yeah, that thing I wrote over the course of a year, really, as it progressed.
No, that song transformed.
So the original version of it was almost bluegrass.
When you take a song live first instead of going to the studio first, you learn better ways to play it, catchier ways to play it. Like coming up with the breakdown in Dreamer's Hymn and stuff. You just come up with stuff that's great live, and then hopefully that can transfer over to the record. But taking them out live and testing them out on the circuit, once they're ready, they're never done from there. Once the song's written, the first time you start playing it live, there's a whole separate writing process that seems to begin there.
Well, how about afterwards, though? Like, after you've got it recorded, do you feel like you're chained to that version of the song when you play it live, or does it
fall? Oh, no.
I do.
Really?
I'm not going to lie. I'll sit there and I'll play, and it's like being in the studio has made me, to me, a better musician, because I think about things more, and I think about when to come in more and come out.
Yeah.
It helps with the whole arrangement of the song. And I usually I don't change many, like, crucial parts of my playing either, you know, because that's really what everybody thinks.
Arrangements
off of.
Do get changed a lot, because a lot of times these songs are strong, you know, lyrically and musically, but, you know, they'll be lacking a bridge or have two verses shoved together where there should be a break there or something. And Jeremy's always, you know, we come out with different arrangements based on, you know, he can step aside from the song. Like, once we've written it, we're kind of happy with it, but he can hear, like, you know, that break's too long or that, you know, which is always. So, yeah, we come out with a different version that we're sort of chained to. But, I mean, a lot of live stuff, we, you know, do longer solo breaks or do breakdowns and drum solos and stuff like that, just fun stuff. So, I mean, yeah.
Well, you know, to me, jam. To me, as somebody who's going to see, like, one of my favorite bands live, like, if they play what I'm accustomed to, that's great, but if they have, like, a break in it where they go in a different direction for a chorus or, like, a one verse or something like that, I'm like, whoa, this is new. This is awesome. This is why I love going to a live show, because you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Like, yeah, you don't want to just sit there and play the CD.
Yeah.
You know,
Well, I mean, some of the stuff, like,
well, some stuff, like, for example, like Dreamer's Hymn.
Yeah.
Like, the solo in it, I really like to mimic sort of the way the solo goes, but there's other things, like, other songs that we play and stuff that I don't play the same thing. But there's, like, signature little licks, like, they're catchy that, you know, you just recognize it, you know?
Yeah,
kind of like what he does
Fire and Whiskey and, you know, stuff like that, you know, Dave.
Yeah. Well, some of the stuff that you guys have been doing live lately, I don't think can ever make it to a record for maybe, like, legal reasons.
I'm going to step off here, man. Good talking to you.
I get to see
you,
Frank.
Cut an acoustic track.
Uh-oh. Hey, what are you working on? What song are you
working on? The same one, Catch 22.
Yeah. Maybe the same guitar over and over and over.
Yeah, the same thing that you're playing.
Yeah, would you do me a favor? What you got? Look in the door of that mini fridge right there and hand me the Red Bull with that.
Yes. We're not going that much longer.
I got it. Okay. I got that thing so early this morning. I slept for about an hour last night.
Yeah, I think that's been a common theme I've heard from a lot of people today.
Yeah, it was. We could pass that on.
What was that old Johnny Cash song? Like, we're recording this on a Sunday. What was it, like Sunday morning coming down or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of sense, you know.
What was it? Oh, yeah. I was going to say that some of the stuff you guys have been doing live lately, I don't think you could actually do for legal reasons, like some of these mashup songs.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I could never commit that.
I'm trying to get sued right now.
Yeah,
I'm too shaggy for.
I mean, on the last album, we did Whiskey in the Jar, but that was only because that song is technically public domain.
Yeah,
nobody's actually claimed it. Nobody knows.
Well, it's kind of like an old Irish reel, right?
It's a traditional Irish.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's got the copyright on that. It may have gone out by now.
Yeah.
I mean. Yeah, it enters from public domain. I think it's 70 years after the death of the original author.
Yeah,
so we get away with Disney.
So yeah, unless Disney owns it.
You know you're tired when you spend 30 seconds trying to tune a guitar with a metronome.
I
handed Dave that same metronome and told him to tune his guitar, and he handed it back. I was like, that's a metronome.
For the record, I told y'all to go to bed. Just saying.
Hey, we're in the studio in the morning.
We're sitting here doing it.
No.
I'm completely fine.
And who was
like
this? Yeah, I was absolutely late.
Mr. Man.
And you know what? I feel wonderful.
Yeah. I went to bed at 8 and got up at 9 and ate breakfast and was here, goddammit.
I'm on the way.
Yeah, speaking of which, pass that around.
So what's like some of the other stuff you guys future-wise stuff? Like you're already doing
like 5 hours ago. I saved money.
You guys are already doing like some of the mashups and like the old Irish stuff. Like, are you going to keep that going even with like the new direction in the new album?
Yeah,
we're still out there, you know. Music and I mean, we're a drinking band basically.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Is, depends on that energy from those songs too. Yeah.
We have very fun songs.
Like we have shows where people definitely want to hear Whiskey in the Jar. They want to hear Seven Drunken Nights. They want to hear Molly Malone.
We have
shows where. No, if I see that banjo, I will break it over your head.
Yeah. Dude, I get excited when Freaky breaks out the banjo. That's the kind of stuff scared. I want to hear. Yeah.
Some people run. Some people just split. But
You pedal faster.
Yeah,
you pedal faster. Any hints on stuff you guys are working on for, like, you know, future fun stuff like that at shows, like mashups or old Irish covers or anything like that?
I got one I'm working on.
You know, drop a hint, man. Give me a hint.
You're gonna have to
do another weird voice change like you did for the Shaggy song.
I mean,
how do you do that, by the way? That's so crazy.
It just comes naturally.
I don't know how you do it, you heard.
I forget who it was. I saw somebody at South by Southwest the year before last. They would do like a couple of things just as a joke, or like some guy would do like a well-known song, but like as Donald Duck or something like that. Just to screw with people.
<That's>
or like, you know, just crazy cartoon voices.
Yeah.
You should get, like, somebody should, like, hire Tom Kenny, the guy that does SpongeBob's voice, and, like, a million other voices, like, being a band.
Yeah.
That would be incredible.
I'll let you know, though, there was one time I just hit the side on the LBC.
Yeah.
And I was on a mission trying to find Mr. Frankie G. I saw a car full of girls, and there wasn't any tweak, and, because, I mean, let's go to know what's up with the River Kings.
Oh, my gosh.
And here comes the lawsuit.
Let's just do that.
He didn't sing it
like,
it's the melody that's talking.
Yeah.
That was,
I'm scared. That's the kind of stuff I like. It's like, when you take, like, a song out of a completely different genre that you would never expect and put it, like, in y'all style.
Yeah.
You know?
I love that kind of music.
I guess what you could say about all that is there's something for everybody.
Yeah.
You know? My grandma cries every time I do Rowling, though. It was a show and I just saw it as disappointing.
It's a very emotional song for
Pat. A lot to it.
We should do Thrift Shop. Let you do that.
Oh man, that would be so cool.
We've got a couple of ideas. I mean, not a day goes by to where I'm not like listening to 107.3 or 106.1 or something like that, and I'm just like, man, that would be kind of cool to play. But then I think about it in practicality, it's like, no.
Well, give me an example. What's the song like that?
That fits that bill. Well, a song that I guess...
I told you one yesterday.
Like some Electric Light Orchestra, or like some, you know, Manfred Mann's Earth Band. Like, something ridiculous yes, like that.
Yes.
Yeah, Alan Parsons Project.
Yeah, the Alan Parsons Project.
Okay,
this guy.
That's insane.
So, I mean, there's just so much good music out there, you can't cover it all.
What else are y'all listening to that might surprise people to hear?
I really nothing. Like... Whiskey River Kings.
That's all we listen to.
No, I don't know. I've been revisiting a lot of older stuff, like Otis Redding and Aretha Franklin and stuff like that. Kind of helps me whenever I'm going into the studio to listen to certain things, like kind of prepare for it.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, and just, you know, going back to the old Muscle Shoals sound and that old, you know, the 60s and 70s. There, you know, it's just that's a lot of what I've been listening to lately, and you know, he just listens to Whiskey River Kings.
Just all the time.
That's all he listens to.
Well, What else? All whiskey, all the time. What else are you guys listening to that people might be surprised to find out about? I guess what I'm getting at.
I'm a huge electro rock fan.
Really? I'll give you an example.
I like freeze pop quite a lot.
Oh yeah, I know that they had some songs on Rock
Band.
Yeah.
I've been listening, and this isn't, you know, nearly to that extreme, been listening to the new Shiny Toy Cons record a lot, and Ladytron and stuff like that, and that does not come through in the music.
That so. Actually does surprise me a little bit, yeah, yeah, that's a good one. How about you, Frog?
Man, I ain't gonna lie, I never thought, but I really like the new Fall Out Boy CD.
Dude, I'm not gonna lie with you,
because, dude, the last song on the album is called Save Rock and Roll, and has Elton John on it.
Really?
It is the sickest.
If any of you are sax players, we're taking applications.
And I promise
Liberace
you,
has Elton John listen. On it.
I'm serious, like, his I don't know, there's something about Elton John's voice in that song, man. It's just, it's amazing.
I just
like,
want System of a Down to put out a new record.
And then never play live again.
How about you, Dave? What else you been listening to?
Oh, God. What have I been listening to, man? I've actually been listening to a lot of Tribe Called Quest lately. Going back to my roots.
See what you did there.
And, I don't know. I'm trying to get a hold of this new Queen of the Stone Age.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah,
that's good.
And I've
been
listening to Foo Fighters a lot lately, too, for some reason.
I have been. Deftones. I've been listening to a lot of Deftones.
I thought it was going to be straight 2 weeks whenever that new Daft Punk record drops.
I saw you talking about that online the other day.
That was a single, dude.
Yeah.
Daft Punk. You know, I got to be honest, I wasn't that impressed with that first single. It's just like the same thing for like three choruses.
Let's do it again.
That is kind of Daft Punk.
Their new album, is it more of like a collaboration album?
I honestly don't know.
That's the whole song.
It sounds completely different than the Tron soundtrack. I'll give you that.
Yeah. It doesn't sound anything like Discovery or Homework. It sure don't sound like those.
Well, Timmy, I'm going to wrap up in a minute, but one thing I always try to get with this is, you know, not completely talking about music the whole time. Like, what else have you guys been into lately as far as, like, maybe TV shows, video games, anything like that?
I have been watching a bunch of TV. I'm not going to lie.
What's your favorite show right now?
It's kind of a tie right now. It's like, I really like Justified a lot.
I keep hearing that all the time.
Personal Interest, you know, is good. And, you know, I've been going back and rewatching a lot of Joss Whedon shows. Like
Golden Girls.
Firefly.
Yeah, I love Golden Girls.
Even have a couch cover.
Have you been following that new Joss Whedon show that's set in the Marvel Universe that's coming out this fall?
No.
Based on S.H.I.E.L.D.
What?
Oh, yeah. It's like Agent Coulson in it.
Yeah. Well, like every episode, there's like another minor Marvel superhero that's going to show up. Like the first one, I think it's Luke Cage or something like that.
Yeah.
That's cool. That sounds really awesome.
You're talking to the comic.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Really?
Now I'm all of a sudden interested.
I didn't. Okay. Well, that's something you can tell me about. Like, what comics you've been reading recently?
Been reading a lot of Deadpool.
Yes.
Trying to keep up with The Walking Dead. Yes. I prefer the books to the show, man. The show.
I gave up on the show
a long time ago, man.
The
show is just now like a bizarro version. That's just
The books are so depressing. Though, like I'm amazed I haven't just, you know, stopped everything.
How far have you gotten? Because I've read the last issue yesterday.
I'm about as close. That's the one where they met Ezekiel. And that's as far.
Oh, that's weird. Like they run into the guy that's like the king of this little place. Yeah, and he has a pet tiger.
Yeah.
Well, I won't spoil it, but you need to read the last issue because that kind of. Just find out for yourself. They kind of play with that a little bit.
Yeah.
What other comics do you like? Like, what's some of your favorites?
Of course, X-Men.
Really?
Amazing Spider-Man. My friend has like almost every single issue of.
Iron Man.
And War Machine.
So that's like you're way more of a Marvel guy than a DC guy.
I don't like DC, man.
I like Batman. Everybody likes Batman, but I mean, come on.
Well, like, here's the thing with me. I like DC comics in other mediums besides comics. Like, their cartoon movies are great.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's like, if you try to read the comics, you have to have, like, a degree in, like, sometimes literature.
And then there's, I guess, Watchmen. They got a new, like, series sort of with Watchmen.
Yeah. Well, what's the guy that originally wrote Watchmen? I can't remember.
Alan Moore.
Didn't he, like, basically said, I have nothing to do with this, please don't read it.
Pretty much. Yeah. Of course, he's also a psychopath.
Yeah.
Read Sorry The Killing Joke. It's his Batman graphic.
Oh, I've read that one.
That's a messed up book. I've seen that before, yeah.
It's great, though.
That's not like the Joker is making jokes and having fun. That's like Joker is, like, raping and murdering people kind of stuff.
Is that the one where he kidnaps Alfred and, like, cuts his eyes out?
It's like, the one where, like, 5 pages in, he shoots Barbara Gordon through the abdomen and makes her paraplegic.
Yeah. That's a messed up book. That's a good one.
Brister was telling me about one where the Joker kidnaps Alfred and, like, chemically blinds him or some shit.
Batman is really messed up. Even, like, the Christopher Nolan movies don't even touch on, like, how dark they really are sometimes. Yeah.
There's an alternate universe with those two where Bruce dies and his mom becomes the Joker and his dad becomes Batman. Yeah.
See, that's what I'm saying about DC. There are a million alternate universes. I can't keep up with it.
That's too much. Marvel is kind of simpler.
Yeah, that's why I like it.
It's easier to keep. It's got more continuity.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I just realized that anybody out there listening to this that thought we were remotely cool no longer does.
Yeah.
Really these nerds, guys, man. If they've listened to this point, you know.
Yeah.
You're in for the long.
We need to do like a whole show sometime on like just comic books and stuff. Yeah.
I'm down. I've got nothing to lose socially.
It's all appeal from here.
Everything I've got going for me is in this one room right now.
And that is the saddest thing anybody has said today.
It is not sad.
What have you been into lately? You've been watching or playing things?
After I say this, everybody's going to turn it off, but I've been rewatching Dragon Ball Z.
We're done here. Yes. Are you serious?
I swear to God, I'm already on I'm about to finish season 3 now, so I'm going back.
So you've got to the point where they finally powered up now. Yeah, it took 3 seasons to do that.
5 more minutes. Yeah. 6 discs later.
Yeah. Basically. End of season 3, so Raditz should just about be dead by now.
Yeah. Actually, Saiyan Saga flowed really well. It's just when it gets to the point where
the Namek Frieza saga, and stuff. Yeah. The end.
Like the beginning of the Namek all the way to Captain Ginyu is freaking awesome. And then it's just like, man, dude, Goku's hurt again. He's taking forever. Goku finally gets there. Everybody's beat up.
Dude, okay,
Frieza's taking forever.
I don't even know where to begin with this.
I
can go all day about like Marvel comic books, but this, I'm just like.
That's my league.
I'm the same way.
And then I've been replaying the Mass Effect series on.
I'm right there with you. Yeah, those are some of my favorites.
I've been playing those, and going back between that and Elder Scrolls, I've been playing those.
Which do you like better?
I don't know. They're both different. You know, it's like they're best of both worlds.
Well, that's my favorite kind of video game, too, where, like, you can take your time with it and, like,
I love decision-making. Yeah. Actually, I just started playing Fallout 3 again.
Yeah.
So, like, I just popped it in, and I love being able to make decisions and stuff and karma and, like, you know, you steal people, bad karma, you know, blow up Megaton and, like, nuclear crap just flying everywhere. Evil car, you know, like you're pretty much evil now.
I was playing the new Tomb Raider game the other night, which is awesome, by the way. It looks amazing. It's a lot of fun, but I got annoyed with the fact that I couldn't make my own decisions about things like I had in games like that, like Mass Effect.
You have to follow what they're doing.
It's like, I would rather be making my own movie instead of following someone else's.
Yeah. The keeper dimension's pretty much the same.
I know what you're going.
It was a glitch.
Anatomically correct. He's talking about.
Yeah, she looks more like a regular human girl.
Not interested.
No.
I'm kind of the opposite. I play a game for the story. Like,
oh, don't lie.
No. No, I'm not talking about Lara Croft. He's talking about sandbox games. I like linear. I like to be told a story.
Well, it depends on the game because, like, I like Arkham City.
That game is sick.
You know, it's got a set story. But the one thing I like about it is you can do other things as well. There's a giant map. You can go figure out all the Riddler's little puzzles, and then you can go and you get random phone calls, and you're like, you got to be here in 2 minutes.
Zaz is one of the most screwed up characters.
Yeah, but I'm just like, it's awesome though. Yeah. It's the fact that you get to do all these extra things while you're still focusing on the main story.
Well, it's a little bit like Bioshock. Like, there's a way deeper story if you want to look into it.
Oh, I love Bioshock.
Oh, dude, I rented the new Bioshock. from a Redbox. I finished it in a weekend. It was insane.
Did you enjoy it? Like
I did. The ending, I won't spoil it for anybody that hasn't yet, but it was a little weird. It took me a few days to figure out if I liked it or not. I think I did, but I don't know. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to spoil it for anybody because it's so cool if you don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I've heard really good things about it. That's the one game, I swear, I was like, it's going to come out this year. Back all the way to next year, and then it's like it's going to come out, and then it's like they pushed it back another month.
Yeah,
they just kept pushing it back. It's like, this game's never going to come out.
Well, it's like
wasn't it worth it.
It's like one of those. What's the company that does like the Half-Life games and Portal and stuff? Valve. They release stuff when it's done. They don't tell you a date because they keep on working until it's perfect.
Portal 2 is magnificent.
Yeah, yeah. Everything I replayed through that recently.
That's what I like, Mrs. Pac-Man.
Well, I know we've like completely lost Jake. He doesn't play games at all.
So are we getting like Stan Lee and Kevin Smith in here too to you know discuss?
Yeah, they'll be by later.
We'll get there.
Dave Grohl's gonna stop by for a minute.
Yeah. Well, he's into comics and video games. Let's get him. Yeah. Well, D-Dub, what have you been doing lately? What have you been into? Or you even had time because you just finished your graduate degree?
Yeah, it's nice to have time. I started working my way back through some of Neil Gaiman's books. Right now, rereading Nancy Boys.
You just had to, like, just completely lay waste everything that we were talking about. Now you just seem like way smarter than we'll ever be.
No, he's a great fantasy writer. Nancy Boys is just a very funny, very witty fantasy novel. Read American Gods. If you want to read a great book, read American Gods.
Yeah, I've heard everybody going on and on about that for years. I never have been able to pick it up.
I mean, it's just the gist of that. Whatever you give time to, you know, that's your god. And he takes that and runs with it and actually personifies these ideas.
Like television is a god.
Actually,
like
media is a god. And it's all these new gods versus all the old gods. You know, you've got Loki and Odin and, you know, all the different pantheons. And it's just, it's building up for a war between the old and the new gods. And it's just, you know, it's a great book. It's an epic. I mean, what else can you say?
I may be wrong about this, but I heard that HBO is doing like a series based on that, like they did with Game of Thrones.
See, I've heard that, and I would very much like that, but I don't get my hopes up anymore because of how many times somebody said they were going to do a Dark Tower series.
Well, yeah.
So I don't even get my hopes up anymore.
Well, at one point, like Ron Howard was going to do like that. It was going to be a combination movies and TV show.
They were going to do three movies with a series of, you know, a television show in between to, you know, because it's seven very massive books and half of Stephen King's, you know, bibliography contributes to the Dark Tower lore.
Well, just a few years ago, nobody would have thought that there would have been a Game of Thrones TV show. Yeah, I mean, you would have thought that was impossible, you know?
No, I mean, it's completely possible, and there's another rumor about it. Somebody else is looking to pick it up. I think I heard rumors that Netflix might be looking to do it.
I don't think they get the money for that.
Yeah, I really don't. I mean, I kind of discarded that rumor immediately. But, I mean, I'd love very much to see it. I mean, no, I'm not going to bore people with that.
Well, guys, let's wrap up. I know y'all gonna get back to work here in a few minutes.
A little bit, yeah.
So, okay. So, if y'all had to give an elevator pitch on the new album, like, to tell what it's about and what's going to be in it.
Everything you want to hear and nothing you don't.
Yeah. That about sums it up. Yeah. It's the best album ever made.
Well, really, everything you didn't know you wanted to hear on the record.
So, when is it dropping?
June 30th.
June 30th. My birthday.
Good really?
That wasn't why.
So wait, y'all are gonna have a album release party for that too, right?
Mm-hmm. So June 21st, I believe.
No, I don't know actually.
It's the 22nd, I think. Fairly soon it's the 22nd.
Well, the point is,
we'll put a thing in this and update everybody about it.
We'll put tickets on sale pretty soon. It's a very small, very private venue.
50 to 70 people.
There's the private release and then the public release.
The public release.
So is it dropping day and date, online and physical?
If everything goes soon, according to plan.
There's no reason it shouldn't.
There's no reason it shouldn't, but
bad things happen. Goes terribly wrong.
Well, awesome, guys. Thanks so much for doing this. And, you know, remind me again the release date?
30th of June.
That's the target date.
That's the target. We should have hard copies in our hand and ready to give you on the 30th. I mean, but as far as, you know, the online date, it should be around the 30th. Oh, but, yeah, it was such a spectacle and everything else trying to get it online last time on certain dates that we're gonna shoot for that target range. Yeah. And we'll let you know.
It'll be somewhere around then. Nice. Well, awesome, guys. Y'all are getting close to finishing up with it. And be out on the 30th, like you said.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
I'm drowning in a sea of whiskey and nicotine. If I'm alive, no, don't feel that way to me. Walk down to the edge of the river, bringing that muddy water, swallow me whole. Take another drag and a long, hot swallow. Fire and whiskey gonna save my. Down to the edge of the river, bringing that muddy water, swallow me whole. Take another drag and a long, hot swallow. Fire and whiskey gonna save my soul.
Oh, Lord, it's gonna be my soul.